Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That is Rob Ensley. Joey Pyburn to my right, Matt Nelson running the board. I'm Tom Nelson. And on the phone, the Region 6 Director of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, none other than our buddy Larry Phillips. Good morning, Larry. How are you, man?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, man.
Morning, Larry. A little overtime here this morning. Thanks for jumping on with us.
Bill, hey, Bill, so, send in your timesheet,
yes,
dude. Come on.
Send it in. Yeah, send we it got in. A PO number for you. So,
tell me you said it was
listen,
okay.
Listen, we've been kicking around the steelhead closure a little bit the last hour, and it's rough news. But can you walk us through what's going on the Southern Olympic Peninsula rivers and how on earth we got to this record low steelhead forecast out there, man, that prompted these closures?
Yeah, it's you know, those of us who have been around and have participated and watched these fisheries, the coast was this, you know, the stability that I think we all looked at as we saw declines in Puget Sound and the challenges associated with that we could, you know, we could point to habitat loss and you know, just the 7.5 million people living in the state that, you know, spent their time on those rivers. And we all felt comfortable that, boy, well, at least we have the coast and that's an option for us. And now here we are. You know, causes for this, obviously complicated. Steelhead have a complicated life history and that tends to expose them in a variety of different fronts. But they were stable, or at least appeared to be stable for many years and gave us that opportunity. And now here we are in 2021 with unprecedented preseason forecasts that are just it put us all in a panic situation. You know, we've got runs, preseason expectations on some of our streams that are significantly below our statement objectives. So the reasons why, I mean, this is a global issue. You can look at the other strongholds in across the Pacific Northwest and to the north. You look at the Skeena system right now that's experiencing similar or having similar conversations. And, you know, we're talking about the largest steelhead returns in the world. And so, you know, most of the experts would point to marine survival as the challenge. But when we get into a situation where we're trying to account for all sources of mortality, we're looking at everything from marine mammal predation to every encounter that we have, even during catch and release fisheries, and trying to make sure that we're identifying opportunities to make this right when conditions improve. And that's, you know, that's really where we're at today.
Well, all of us sportsmen and all of us steelhead fishermen, I mean, we're passionate about this stuff. I know us three are sitting here wondering, is there an end in sight for these low forecasts? And can we draw a line? Is it possible to draw a line between, you know, this overly abundant coho run that we've seen here this fall in all of the rivers here in Washington, and perhaps an uptick in the steelhead runs maybe in the next few years? I mean, is that even a comparison?
Well, the good news, I mean, we're digging for good news here, and I think we all are. And is you can look at the, you know, we talked about this yesterday, you can look at the postseason analysis for our salmon returns, and those are obviously particularly coho driven by productivity in the ocean and increased survival and conditions in the ocean. And that certainly has improved, and that will benefit steelhead as well. And we came off some pretty brutal years. If you think about, you know, 2015, the droughts we had, those are significant in terms of impact on steelhead that rely on those in-river rearing conditions for up to a couple of years before they out-migrate. We have had record, you know, both high water and low water in recent years, and, you know, call it what you want, but the conditions for steelhead, both in the freshwater environment and in the ocean, are changing. And and it, the fish don't appear to be responding very well to that. And that is a big driver we believe in what we're seeing today.
Which to me just absolutely screams and begs for hatchery supplementation on a lot of these runs. I mean, you know, we and Larry, you and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. The recent floods we had, the recent trifecta of warm water fire hoses, the Pineapple Express, it just ripped out all this low snow. You know, also makes the case for wise and well done hatchery supplementation of our salmon runs. But like you alluded to though, there are definitely some bright spots with regard to marine survival. You know, you look at that's a commonality between steelhead runs up and down the coast. Obviously, it is for salmon as well. So, what did you see at the end of this salmon season that got you excited, got you fired up, and got you really optimistic about oceanic feeding conditions?
Yeah, you know, we've been coming off a few rough years of salmon as well. We've had some particularly, obviously, Puget Sound wild fish and some of the stocks in the Columbia have been performing lower than average and in some cases significantly lower. So we've been, I think, somewhat conservative. I think we can all look at a couple of years ago when we had a really large coho forecast. And these forecasts are driven from, you know, our ocean models mostly for coho. We look at a variety of different ocean indices and that can give us a glimpse into the conditions, the rearing conditions for coho. And we've used that near shore assessment. It's an assessment that NOAA does. It's a surface trawl that we go out and we quantify the number of coho. We know how many fish are making it out of the river systems. We know how many are, then we do the surface trawl and we can get an estimate of survival. This has been a really strong performer in terms of our ability to forecast the returns for many years, and that just collapsed in 2005
and 2015 to
2019.
Yeah, oh, gotcha. Okay.
And so the challenge there is that, you know, if we lose those tools, boy, what are we going to do then? And so we've been pretty conservative since then. I mean, a couple of years since then, and lo and behold, in 2021, this year, we saw a really good return, and in most instances, we saw the returns come in either at or above our preseason expectations. So it gives you some room for confidence. And I think that, you know, some of the ocean conditions that are being looked at through the research folks and the University of Washington and Newport Lab and things like that are looking at these ocean indices. And I think they're remaining positive. So, you know, we don't want to jinx ourselves here by, you know, things can change quickly in the ocean, but we're optimistic. I'm optimistic that we're going to continue to see improved conditions, or at least some in the near future, we'll see some benefits from those marine conditions that are more conducive to coho and salmon survival.
Well, one thing we know about our fish and wildlife is if we do our part and we give them a little chance, man, they can come back. I mean, I've seen it in my lifetime where you're like, man, where are the fish? And then we give them a little break. We do our part. They get some breaks out there in the ocean. And next thing you know, we get them back. So let's hope and pray that we get our steelhead back, you know. We all love them so much, and it's been such a big part of my life, man. I don't want to not have steelhead here in the Northwest.
Yeah, it's a difficult conversation to have with folks who were born and raised here. Joey, I was born on up in Arlington, you know, up near guys' country and grew up on the Stilly. And, you know, I'm looking at the opportunities that we had once and that we don't have today. And that's a difficult conversation to have. A lot of people that are frustrated and just want it fixed. Tom, you alluded to hatchery production. And yeah, that can be a short-term answer to harvest and potentially supplementation, but it doesn't address the bottleneck and where that survival of wild fish is occurring. And there's a place for it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there definitely is. And we take full advantage of that. And you can look at up and down the coast where we've got hatchery programs and many of our coastal programs have a steelhead component and that are doing well. And we're not able to, well, doing, there's opportunity in some of those populations where we're not able to act those because of the severe, depression of wild stock that we can't have any impacts. At least we've agreed with our co-manager partners to limit our impacts to zero in many instances, the Chehalis being one of them.
And so when we spoke yesterday, we also alluded to the predation issue, which I think is extremely prevalent with regard to wild fish population.
I just wish we could get those steelhead eating some of those razor clams out off the beach. So they might be, you know, we get them keyed in on those. Yeah. We might be fine. But I'm like you, Larry. I mean, we got two little girls at home, and they're ready to go catch their first steelhead.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to get them out there. I mean, they're casting and doing all the right stuff, and we're sitting on the sidelines. But hopefully we get it back. In the meantime, though, we can go razor clam digging on the coast. Unprecedented numbers of clams out there on the coast. I know you've been out there a bunch, buddy. When you do head out, are you seeing just stupid numbers of clams out there for the digging?
You know, it's really exciting. And you talk to Dan Ayers and his team, and I don't know if you guys have met Dan, but mm-hmm. – you know, it's a guy who's 40 years into his career and acts like it's his, you know, first day, and he's the luckiest guy on the planet to be working there. So it's just fun to listen to him. And really, the numbers are off the charts. Last year and this year, we've had approximately 20 million harvestable razor clams on the beach. And if you equate that to the number of the effort we've seen in the past, although we might be setting, you know, per day participation records this year just because of what I'm seeing, like yesterday, last night on social media from some of the traffic jams heading to the coast. But the bottom line is that we're in just an awesome situation where we're taking advantage of every possible tide. We've increased the bag limit to 20, and folks are showing up, and we're not seeing a reduction. I think somebody alluded to it a while ago that as we move through the season and we remove these clams from the population, that depletion in some instances from some resources can result in less success. And we're just not seeing that yet. So Dan's monitoring that, making sure, obviously we got a finish line we're looking at, and that is kind of the spring digs for the razor clam festivals for both Ocean Shores and Long Beach. And obviously those spring break type opportunities are really important to the coastal community. You know, 180,000 digger days so far.
That's crazy.
About $30 million economic benefit to the coastal community.
180,000 digger
pretty cool.
days.
Pretty cool.
That is nuts. That's a popular and they're
awesome.
Yummy.
Well, we appreciate you jumping on with us, Larry, and we look forward to seeing you out of CQ here for some blackmail fishing this spring and sitting down and chatting more about all of this stuff that we're so passionate about.
We can solve a lot of these problems with a plate of halibut and a few beers, and we'll have it all solved by the end of the evening, Larry.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks
a great weekend, buddy. Appreciate the time, man.
You too, guys.
All right, Larry. Thank you so much. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report is brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
WDFW announced the tough news that many of the popular Olympic Peninsula steelhead rivers will be closed to fishing this winter. Biologists are forecasting the lowest return on wild steelhead on record, and closing them is the only option to get steelhead back to the spawning grounds. Closures in effect from December 1st through April 30th include the Chehalis River and its tributaries, the Hump Tulips River, and the Quinault and Tweets Rivers and their tributaries. The Willapaw Bay Rivers and the Quileute and Hull Rivers will also allow catch and release of wild steelhead, and the harvest of two hatchery steelhead. Fishing from a boat will be permitted on the main stem of the Quileute River below the 101 bridges on the Kalawa and Bogashiel Rivers. Those rivers will stay open through March.
Razor clam open on the Washington coast through December 9th. Long Beach and Twin Harbors open every day of the week, and the Mocrocks Beach is open today, Monday and Wednesday. Copalis is open tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The razor clam limit is now 20 per person, and these are all evening digs, so make sure you bring that headlamp or lantern. The next round of tentative razor clam digs is set for December 15th through the 23rd. Clams for Christmas.
A record number of early returning coho have returned to the Clackamas River in Oregon this fall. 9,000 coho have already passed over the North Fork Reservoir Dam, making it the largest early coho run on the Clackamas since 1958. The early coho run returns in September and October, and a second run of coho hits the Clackamas in November and December, so there's even more coho on the way. It's the fourth time in the last 8 years that the river has seen a record number of early returning coho. It's all due to a new collection facility above the North Fork Dam that rapidly transports smolt 7 miles downstream past three dams in just a couple of hours. Prior to its construction, it would take the smolts up to 12 days to be collected and trucked past the three dams on the Clackamas. The new collection system transports approximately 97% of the smolts downstream so they can make their way to the ocean.
Bluebird weather with temps in the mid-60s in the Columbia Basin this past week made duck hunting a bit of a yawner on the east side. Those temps are forecast to drop into the 20s and 30s late this next week, and that should ramp up the duck activity on the east side, though. Shelby Ross from the Duck Taxi is excited to see some colder weather in the forecast, and he was busy calling groups looking to take advantage of what could be the first good push of birds they've seen in a while.
Madison Dam fails, stranding thousands of fish. The world-renowned Madison River in Montana nearly went dry Tuesday when a spillway gate on Hegdom Dam failed to open properly. A coupling on a metal shaft that keeps the spillway open broke, and the flow dropped from 650 to just 200 cubic feet per second, a massive drop in flow. Dewatered the spawning beds of brown trout and stranded more trout, sculpins, and other aquatic life in small pools disconnected from that main river flow. River flow in the Madison is drastically reduced, and side channels were dewatered for 2 days while Northwest Energy scrambled to fix the broken shaft to reopen that spillway. During that time, hundreds of anglers poured into the area with nets and cupped hands to rescue the fish from dewatered areas. Biologists say unseasonably warm weather helped keep this from being a total disaster. Freezing weather would have been an absolute death sentence for those fish trapped in the backwater area.
Hunters are up in arms over the closure of the spring bear season in Washington and have set up an online petition at change.org to gather signatures. The petition asks the Fish and Wildlife Commission for a revote of the decision. It's a 60-day turnaround, however, and it's unclear if a revote would open the 2022 spring bear hunt in Washington. As of yesterday, close to 15,000 hunters had signed the petition. In November, the Fish and Wildlife Commission paused the spring bear hunt despite testimony from WDFW biologists and the director that it had little effect on the bear population in Washington. Hunters can find the petition online at change.org.
The Lummi tribe near Bellingham has declared an emergency after trapping approximately 70,000 invasive green crabs in their aquaculture facility this fall. European green crabs can devastate local crab and shellfish populations. Tribal and state agencies have been setting traps for them the last few years to monitor and remove them. The green crab population explosion in the 750-acre Lummi Sea Pond has tribal leaders extremely worried, which is why they declared an emergency. Anyone that finds a green crab on Lummi lands is asked to call 360-380-8672.
The Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
How do they taste?
I don't know, man, but we don't want them. They're nasty critters.
They're nasty. They burrow. And they're really hard to get rid of. Once they get a foothold, they're difficult.
They feed on our clams and our crabs. Uh-huh. I mean, they're devastating. Also, Sport Co. Member Night December 7th and Outdoor Emporium Member Night tonight downtown here. And also, if you go to our Outdoor Emporium today and mention Outdoor Line when you walk in the door, they're either going to throw you out or they're going to give you an 11-inch Pro-Troll flasher. So, take your chances.
Stay in there and make them give you an 11-inch flasher.
Fight your way in and get that flasher and then get thrown out. But, walk in and say Outdoor Line down at Outdoor Emporium today up until 4 o'clock and get a free 11-inch Pro-Troll flasher and then run for your life.
Yes.
So,
nice.
Barbary sheep. Oudad. I really kind of wasn't aware that this was a deal.
It's a deal in Texas, yeah. It's almost as much of a big deal as bacon on a stick at the exit 115 over at Kittitas. If you're headed over pheasant or duck or goose hunting this week, swing into the Shell station in Kittitas or the Kittitas exit and get bacon on a stick. It will change your life.
See, I was surprised you didn't make a better move for that because Larry kind of, he was, whatever. I was ready to pull in there.
On the way back, you meant.
On the way back.
I pulled in there on the way home.
I had work to do.
There was a line of truckers and farmers in there to get their bacon on a stick.
It's no joke. It's not like a skinny little piece of bacon. It's a big, thick slab of bacon.
So there's like regular cut bacon, which is really, really, okay, right? And then there's thick cut bacon, which is a lot more interesting. This is, you get two pieces of this out of a pig. Right? Yeah, there's two of them, right? And they're just, they're amazing, thick, huge.
So Hall of Famer Kevin Gogan lives in Kittitas now, and he's our guy on the street over there. He discovered this little trollop right there at the Kittitas exit 115, bacon on a stick. Go check it out if you're headed to Eastern Washington this weekend. And book your Oddad trip to Texas and bring your Browning down there and shoot a big Burberry sheep.
Shawnee Campbell of Browning Arms joining us next, talking to us about this Texas Oddad deal. Colorado Elk. The new Maxis 2 shotgun, the X-Bolt Mountain Pro, Texas Doves, and a whole lot more right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up.
You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's Wheelhouse, brought to you by Weldcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Welcome to the Wheelhouse here on the Outdoor Line 710 ESPN Seattle. Where did we go wrong? I mean, you know, we're sitting here in a studio, and meanwhile, we get to talk to Shawnee Campbell, who's a media and events manager of Browning, right? I mean, that's got to be the best job.
Who screws off for a living? Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, no, best job ever. Right?
Shawnee Campbell, laughs. Welcome to the show, and thanks for what. So, your duties as a media and events manager brings you to Texas for Doves and Oddad, Colorado Elk, and so very much more. So, yeah. So, tell us about your fall hunting season, multi states.
Good morning.
Well, that was a great intro, guys. I love it.
Good morning, Shawnee. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. This year has been awesome. So we started off in Texas for Dove and then went to Colorado for Elk and then back to Texas for Odda just a couple weeks ago. It's a job. It's crazy that I ended up here, but I absolutely love it. Wouldn't trade it for the world. Yeah, all good things. And it is weird that it's a job, though. That was I appreciate that.
Well, we use the J word loosely around here.
Yeah.
Sure. And the work word loosely. But those Texas Oddad, talk to our listeners about that a little bit. We had a friend up here from Skagit Arms just got back from an Oddad hunt down there. They're a sheep. They're an exotic sheep, but a bunch of them got loose down there in Texas, too. Talk about that hunt a little bit. It's a very unique and kind of exciting hunt down there in Texas.
It is very, very unique. I had never done it. So we flew into El Paso, and we drove about 3 hours south of there, outside of a little town there in Marfa. And I had never seen a Oddad before. I was like, we pulled up, and they're all over. They're taking over West Texas. It was incredible to see them. I was guided down there, of course, but I had no idea what sheep hunting was like. I got a good taste of it, and I hope it doesn't push me into more sheep stuff. Because
you're done.
That can be expensive. Yeah,
yeah. The term is sheep freak, Shawnee, and I've seen advanced cases of it. Yes,
I might have got the itch just by starting there. But man, they're cool animals. We kind of hit when they were all grouped up in bachelor herds, and you know it was I don't know how to describe it because it wasn't like an elk hunt, right? Like elk hunting is hard and you're hoofing it and you're, you know, going everywhere after them. But this one, they're plentiful. And maybe it's just because of where I was at. But man, I don't know how to explain it. They're crazy animals. And the rocks we had to climb over to get to the one that I shot was insane. I shot him at the top of a rock slide. At 430 yards with that 6.8 Western. It was pretty crazy. They're cool. They're really cool animals. If you guys have the opportunity, I highly recommend that hunt.
Is it a hunt that somebody could go down and do on their own, like get on some public land and go traipse around the mountains and find one of these things?
Yeah, I really think you could. The place I was at was called Cibolo Creek. We were on a ranch. But if you found some public land down there, I don't think you'd have a problem right there outside of Marfa.
Hmm. How did that 6.8
flights?
How'd that 6.8 perform? Because I've heard that those Oddad are tough as hell.
That's what they warned us. They said like if you hit them, you know, hit them good because they'll run. You'll never find them. That 6.8 Western was perfect for this. I hit him right in the front shoulder and he dropped. So we didn't have any crazy mishaps or anything like that. We shot four of them in 2 days. And I'm a big fan of the 6.8 though, guys. Like, let's be honest. So
well, we are too. I mean, and you get a lot bigger bullet. You know, we've been hunting the 6.5 PRCs too for a long time and they're outstanding, but they're a little on the light side. And you take one of those out for elk, yeah, probably going to get the job done, but there's going to be a discussion along the way about this little bullet. But that's that 175 grain bullet. It is a hammer. Joe and I have killed all kinds of critters with them now, and of course you have too. And that's an excellent round. And we shot them in 20 plus mile an hour winds over in Montana, 600 yards, right on the money.
Yeah,
an incredible bullet. And you've killed some elk too with that 6.8 at 400 plus yards as well, haven't you, Shawnee?
Yeah. So last year I was lucky enough to take this out before it launched. And I got a deer and an elk, the elk was at 476 and the deer was at 440. I mean, all of these have been crazy long shots, and it is so accurate. It's easy to shoot. It's fun to shoot. I don't have any felt recoil problems with it. I can watch the animal drop. That was my favorite thing with that elk at 476. I hit him in the front shoulder, and I watched him drop in the scope.
And that's what's...
Usually I'm trying to find it again.
Mm-hmm. That's what's the amazing aspect of it, because you think about plinking with a 22 out of a scoped rifle when you're a kid, you know, and you watch that bullet go pop, 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 and then I got into, you know, the 300 Win mags, and, you know, I've always been a Browning hunter. I got an A-bolt, but I'm telling you, and I'm not a small person, but that 300 had me flinching. And so it was unbelievable. The felt recoil with this 6.8 Western is just like, wow. And you know, the buck I got with it, I saw the bullet hit him, and I just really had never had that experience before or really even anticipated it. But that's what makes it such a pleasure to shoot. But the bottom line is, Shandy, it makes you more accurate with that gun because you trust it.
It does. It really does. And so much more confident in that gun.
Yeah.
I pull up and I just know it. I'm like, hey, gonna hit the foot, you know. Yeah. I don't have any problems with this. I never have, and it's my new go-to.
Now, for us mountain hunters, you've got a new Mountain Pro coming out. You shaved some ounces off of that thing. Talk to us about that a little bit. I'm excited about that rifle.
I do the X-Bolt Mountain Pro, and I have mine in burnt bronze, but it also comes in a tungsten color as well. So yeah, we shaved off some ounces out of that one. We're running about 6 pounds 2 ounces right now. And that's my go-to. That is deadly accurate. It's super easy to sight in. We never have any problems with them. And I packed it in on that elk hunt in Colorado. We averaged 9 miles a day on foot, 10 on the horses, but it never got heavy. I love to pack that gun around. Pack it through the airport. Pack it, you know, all over the place.
I want to see that packing it through the airport.
That did not sound good.
No, it actually didn't. In fact, I got Homeland Security online too right now.
But. I'm so sorry, but in my case, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. When you've got to travel with your gun, it's not good.
This is why we don't mess with you, Shandy. No, we're not messing with you at all. Yeah.
it is a great gun. I think Rob, you have one too now, right?
I don't have one yet. It's on order, but I'm excited to get it. And Joe and I do so much packing around in the mountains. We've already got some tags next year, some really gnarly stuff. And I'm looking to drag that thing around with me up in the mountains next fall. I get a lot of questions, Shandy, about the A5 and the Maxxis 2. Mm-hmm. And what are the differences? Yeah. I mean, I can just breeze over it really quick. You know, the A5 is an inertia-operated shotgun, and the Maxxis is a gas-operated shotgun. Can you talk just real quick about the differences between those two, because there's a lot of interest in both of those shotguns up here.
Yeah, so everybody knows the A5 is a humpback, right? Mm-hmm. And the Maxxis is a little bit slimmer, and you did go through the inertia-driven. You know, I think it comes down to a preference. If you can pull up the A5 and you're really comfortable with it, great. If you can pull up the Maxxis and you're really comfortable with it, they're both so reliable. I don't know about differences in them per se. They have a lot of differences, I guess, but I lean Maxxis too because I can't see over the hump, but everybody loves the humpback. And I've taken both out, love the A5 on Dove and took the Maxxis on Dove. I don't know. I guess I just shoot them all. It's hard to say.
How often do you clean your shotgun?
I heard somebody in that studio may or may not.
Ever.
Well, you know what? I mean, I've never been a guy who cleans my rifles or my shotguns a lot. But I don't know. I made it through a whole season not cleaning my A5 the first season with it. And I was like, geez, I'm in the blind with guys with fancy auto shotguns. And yeah, guess what?
And they're failing.
They're failing.
Yeah.
And mine isn't failing. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to clean it and see how long I can go. And I'm way into my second season on that gun. I have yet to clean that shotgun, and it has not failed.
Now, I would like to say that Joey has impeccable personal hygiene, okay? I mean, it's not like he smells in the studio, right? But we're a little concerned, Shandy, okay? Should this trend continue? You understand my concern.
I'm going through this season, I guarantee
it.
Okay. Fun fact. I hunted teal on the Great Salt Lake. I didn't mean for this to happen, but I went out in coffins. We shot a bunch of teal. Well, I ended up putting my Maxis away. And I didn't think about it till the next year. Of course, Great Salt Lake, salt all over it. And then the next year, we ended up doing the same hunt for swan out there. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. but I pulled it out, and it shot the swan the next day. So I get where you're coming from. I am.
So what you're saying is there's no reason to clean shotguns.
Well, Joe's running a test. We're, you know, this is definitely a test he's running on that A5, and it is working. And this guy, hunt, what do you hunt, 2 to 4 days a week? Somewhere in there? Every week.
Yeah. He's out. Oh, man.
Yeah, and the conditions are horrible up here.
It's called work.
It's a job for Joe.
Yes.
Pretty much. So, Shawnee, what are you looking forward to coming up the rest of this year and into next year?
Oh, SHOT Show, guys. I'm excited. I am hoping and praying that SHOT Show goes on, and then we start over into hunts. I have booked my first Alaskan caribou hunt, so I am super excited about that.
Whereabouts are you going, Shawnee?
I think I'm not actually. Well, I take that back. We're going up, I think, to Fairbanks and then flying north of there.
Yep. Yep.
And it's a float trip. So we go up on boats. I think it's 10 hours on in a river raft and then hunting them from there. So it should be quite the adventure.
Log on to browning.com. You got free shipping through the holidays on a variety of lifestyle items. You're talking about game cams, lights, hats, slings, knives, apparel, whatever. Free shipping for the holidays through the month of December. browning.com. She is Shawnee Campbell. Shawnee, don't be a stranger. And we need to talk about this whole Joey gun deal. You know, the cleaning. So we need to send him a cleaning kit or something like that. But no.
I can do that. I got you.
All right.
I'm hoping see you down at SHOT Show. I just registered yesterday, so hoping to see you down there. It's always a blast seeing everybody from Browning and hanging out and kicking tires. So thanks so much for jumping on with us.
Thanks, Shawnee.
Enjoy the rest of the
Thanks for having me, guys.
Happy holidays.
You too.
Thanks, all right. Shawnee. Take care, Shawnee. Thanks. Coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's RobinsonRV.com's Really Where? And it's next here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really? Where?
It's coming back. The island is tinny and delayed.
Where'd you get them, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
Ocean Journey Red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got them?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really? Where? RoyRobinsonRV.com will take you anywhere. Really?
It's time to head to the all-new Roy Robinson RV Center, 15855 Smoky Point Boulevard in Marysville. You're going to find a complete selection of Winnebagos from Class A's, Class B's, Class C's, Super C's, travel trailers, fifth wheelers, toy haulers, pop-ups, and so much more, including the all-new Echo by Winnebago. This is a Class C on steroids, four-wheel drive. So cool. Go check it out. The Echo by Winnebago at Roy Robinson RV, RoyRobinsonRV.com.
Really Where, we'll have you going all different sorts of directions this week.
Absolutely.
Looking at the forecast, if you're a hunter, a waterfowl hunter in particular, you got to love this cold weather moving in. It'll kick things off on the west side here, but I'm really looking at the Columbia Basin.
Good call. It's been
hot and dusty over there the last couple of weeks. We were over there this week. Temperatures 65 to 70 degrees over there. Just horrible conditions, but we are looking good now. I bet you we see some of those red, you know, bright orange-feeted greenheads pouring in from the north here this week. We got temps in the 20s. It's definitely not cold enough to freeze everything out. A lot of times if we get a hard freeze over there, it'll push all the birds down into Umatilla and down to the Columbia. It's looking pretty good. I mean, mid-20s, low 40s during the day, upper 30s, something like that. It's the perfect scenario as long as they don't get fog over there.
Mm-hmm.
It should be really good later in the week this next week. So that's high on my list. Razor clamming through the 9th on the coast. Unprecedented numbers of razor clams. Everybody we know that's gone out there has had early limits of clams. Walk out to the beach, schwack out your clams, head home.
Yeah.
Squidding kicked off in Elliott Bay last couple of nights. I mentioned this earlier in the show. Jason Norlander from Outlander Charters absolutely hammered out the squid in Elliott Bay last night. Give him a call if you're looking to get a charter or just head down to one of the piers in the bay. Sounds like it's still slow down that Tacoma area. But definitely the local stuff just kicked off. Crabbing, you guys have had some great success out of Everett.
So much fun.
Great crab down on the south end, too. Marine Area 10, Dave Johnson been getting him out of Manchester. So.
Well, it's such a nice change of pace because everybody wants to bring this, you know, heavy carbohydrate weirdness, you know, into holiday parties and stuff like that. And you show up with a crab dish, some crab dip or something like that. It's just amazing. Or
you know, my own personal favorite, just bring the crab in, and it's a wonderful family activity to sit there and crack it. And like my mom does a waffle feed, crab waffles, dude. Crab waffle. You can have that.
Crab omelets.
Take the cake. There you go.
With some right. cheese and crab onion. To, ding, 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 just ding, add ding. Crab to any,
anything.
Anything. Crab omelets. Yeah. It's better.
It makes ridiculous.
So much better.
After we had Chef Patrick on, I made the crab cakes. Holy cow.
Yeah,
and listen, so the key to those crab cakes is mix it all up, make your patties. Put them in the fridge and let them chill out for an hour or two.
That was a tip he gave us last weekend. That was a power move.
Then they don't fall apart when you're cooking them. They stick together and you get perfect little crab cakes.
Yeah, that was a great little tip. Also, rivers are dropping into shape in that Forks area. There will be some hatchery steelhead out there this week. Temperatures look good. Freezing levels coming down. Those rivers should hold this week. And we'll see some hatchery fish coming out of those Forks area rivers for sure. So that's an option for you folks looking to get out and wet some jigs or a spoon or back troll some plugs or who knows what out in that Forks area for a steelhead.
Okay, so I get picked on a lot about donating a trip. I have donated a trip to the NSIA, the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, and they're having their annual holiday auction online. So this goes to a great cause. The Northwest Sports Industry Association kind of keeps, they do a lot of lobbying and stuff and try to, work opportunities. So go to NSIAfishing.org and you can come fishing with Joey and I on the Duckworth Sea Beast. And maybe even invite Robbo, but I doubt it because he's different.
No.
He can be difficult.
I've had enough of Robbo. We've been hunting together all season.
He can be difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the whole Seattle thing. I can't drive through Seattle. I got to go through Seattle twice.
Yeah.
Boy, that's tough.
My buddy Johnny Mack from Washington Backcountry, they do some great charity events. They're going to be doing a charity event it's next Saturday, December 11th at 5 o'clock, Straight Sheet Fabrications in Mukilteo. Go check out WashingtonBackcountry.com. They raise a bunch of money and everybody donates toys and it's a bunch of hunters getting together and just kind of creating a community. It's a great deal. I'll be there, so come check it out.
Oh, cool. Is there a website or something folks could fire that up?
WashingtonBackcountry.com.
WashingtonBackcountry.com.
Also, member night tonight at Outdoor Emporium in downtown Seattle. Tons of giveaways. If you haven't been to one of those, they're a blast. And if you walk into Outdoor Emporium today and mention the Outdoor Line, you'll get a free Pro Troll Flasher. Pick a winner there. Member night down at Sport Co. is the 7th. And I'm hoping to be there. I need to make a run down to Oregon.
Are you sure they didn't
say
you get whacked with a Pro Troll flasher slapped in the face?
Thank you. I have another. December 7th, Sport Co. Member Appreciation Night. Those are a blast, and they give away a ton of stuff. If you go to one of those events, you'll walk out of there with something.
I just got a nasty text. I gave the fish donation a little too fast. Here it is. Go to NSIAfishing.org and then click on events. NSIAfishing.org. Click on events, and you'll see the Duckworth 30-foot trip donation right there, and you can bid on it.
Also, I mentioned earlier that the Cascade River might actually still be open for a co. It's closed. It closed the end of November. Kevin John at Holiday Sports was like, you idiot.
But the main stem remains open. Yeah.
Yeah, main stem of the Cascade is open, but I don't know, man.
The main stem has been a little remodeled.
Bring a 5-gallon bucket and get some water out of there while you're at it.
Take a bucket of water home.
Yeah,
everybody
take some
gets
water
a free
home
bucket of water.
Because it is rolling up there. And I wouldn't be surprised if the parking lot itself, like up at Marble Mountain, even at Howard Miller, there could be water that high.
Oh, dude.
It is cranking.
Those ramps, Marble Mountain, that ramp, it was getting tough anyway because there was just a bunch of stuff kind of blown in there. It was tough to get a boat in there. But I imagine, the ramp there and at Birdsview and Hamilton and all that kind of stuff definitely took a hit. But again, going back to this whole razor clam deal, what did Larry Phillips say? 180,000 digger days out there on a coast.
On a typical dig, with good weather, they could get 20,000 diggers in one night down there on the coast. If you haven't been out there,
it's worth going out there just to see it.
Oh yeah,
it's crazy.
And some tricks are, these are evening digs.
Yeah,
and you've got to have
just park your truck
and just
spin around three times and take off.
Yeah.
Well, your lighting source, okay?
Yes.
You've got to have something that casts a broad beam of light. You can't just bring your tiny little headlamp with you. You got to bring an LED lenser or a big Petzl headlight, one of those with a big battery pack on the back. You can cast a wide beam, okay, or a lantern with some legs on it.
You need the old rusty Coleman pump gas lantern.
You got to put some little legs on it. Dad and Uncle Pete figured this out because if you're out on the surf line, The surf comes in and washes your lantern up the beach. So they built these little stands with these little legs to put their lanterns down so they wouldn't wash them.
Robbo's next blog on theoutdoorline.com is going to be lantern legs.
How to build your own lantern legs.
From a guy that's never dug razor clams.
I've dug razor clams and sand shrimp, but I don't have to do that anymore. Yeah.
But really, one little tip is if you got Onyx on your phone, drop a pin on your car or put three lights in your rig or one light or whatever, because it can be difficult, because all you're doing is you're just walking down the surf line with your head staring straight down. And when you finally put your head up and look around, you're like, where am I going?
Yeah, exactly. Go to Outdoor Emporium and say the Outdoor Line, and they're going to give you a brand new Pro-Troll flasher. You missed any of the show, jump on MyNorthWest.com, jump on TheOutdoorLine.com, or download that iTunes podcast app. You get full shows. Matt will have those up soon. Give us a follow on social media at Joey Pyburn, at Rob Ensley on Instagram, at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. For Rob Ensley, for Matt Nelson, behind the glass, for Joey Pyburn, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.